Please listen carefully.
And now, live from the attic that smells like a basement in McKinney, Texas, it's the Assuming Positions Podcast, featuring two guys high-fiving with words, Kevin and Mikey.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Assuming Positions Podcast. Kevin over here.
And Mikey over here.
And today, we are wrapping up our series called
Head of the Heist.
Head of the Heist. We're taking stuff and nobody can stop us.
You can't stop us. We're stealing things. Are we doing it for good reasons, Robin Hood style? Are we doing it for bad reasons?
We haven't really discussed, so it's still up in the air.
I think it will play out in the story as it progresses.
I think based on our picks, you can sort of surmise the kind of missions we would do.
Yes, mine's shaping up kind of Robin Hood-y a little bit. But, hey, man.
Nothing wrong with that A-team vibe.
Man, the A-team is like almost like one of the perfect heist teams because they literally have the muscle, the mastermind, the smart guy, who's also the distraction too,
yep,
and the muscle. Theirs is a four-man team. We're making a five-man team.
But they fit all the tropes that we've covered mostly so far. So
they do. They fit all the tropes perfectly. They're kind of a typical heist team, as it were, caper team.
Yes. But thumbs up to you for not just picking the entire A team to fill in this team. You varied it up like we usually do. So
we can't. Not allowed.
It's against the regulations.
Against the regulations. And in the regulations, so the running gag is that Mikey and I came up with this, was presented to us on the Dallas Retro Gamers Facebook group in December. It was just a thought experiment for them. It wasn't like, here, Assuming Positions, do this. It was just like, there. And we're like, oh, that's a good idea because it's a build-a-crew and we do those all the time. And then we shelved it until later. And then later came and Mikey's the only one who remembered it was video games. And I started using TV characters, not on purpose, but anyway.
It's how we've done all the other ones is you really can just pick from all pop culture. We open it up that way. You just can't repeat you can't repeat properties like we were saying.
So as a penalty restriction, I have to stay in only live action TV, and Mikey is sticking with the video games, which has been much harder, and I really think your picks have been fun.
Oh, I agree with you as well, because I think the easy out would have been movie characters for the heist pick, because
100%.
There's way, like we were saying, I think we said it last episode, but there's way more heist stuff in movies, but for video games and TV, you got to think a little bit, which makes it more fun, I think.
It does make it more fun, for sure. Yeah, and I can't wait to see your Photoshop of your crew.
It's going to be ridiculous.
And whatever we name the video, you'll be naming a video game, I'll be naming a television show.
Yes.
So what have we had in the past, like Shenanigans and the Spellersons? And I had like...
it wasn't Space Team 5.
Yeah, mine was like...
Mine was like Orbit. Yep. Lost Orbit.
I don't remember.
Or Misfit Orbit, something like that. I had a team of Misfits always, but...
Yeah. We're a bunch of misfits.
Yeah.
So we did something fun last night. We had family movie night.
Ooh, what'd you guys watch?
Well, it's kind of funny because of everything that's going on, you do more ordering online than you usually do. And I found out that Target is really good about, you can get all kinds of stuff from Target online.
There you go.
So in my last order, a bunch of microwave popcorn came. And my wife was like, hey, we should watch a movie tonight. Pop some of that popcorn and let's watch a movie. So we're like, what movie are we going to watch? And Gabe's like, I want to see E.T. again because I haven't seen it in a bunch of years. And I want to see it now through like teenage eyes.
I get it.
So we watched E.T., the extraterrestrial Steven Spielberg classic last night.
Classic.
And of course, they had no problems with it. Still good. It's really neat to see they have got more nuance out of it because I think the last time they saw it was probably when they were around 10, around Elliot's age. So they experienced it from that level. And now it's years later and they're experiencing it from a level where they can really see like, oh, we've seen Stranger Things. We've seen J.J. Abrams Super 8.
Yep.
And we see where those dance moves were learned, you know?
Yeah, they're seeing all the patterns and like the crossover between who stole from who and how everybody sort of matches up to the style.
because E.T. is one of those things when you watch it, it's like, is this an episode of Stranger Things? Like, really?
Yep. Music and because, everything.
Yeah. I mean, even down to the early on with those like Ford Broncos coming up, just like hoppers and the flashlights and stuff. It's like, what? So
did you watch the version where they had guns, or did you watch the version where they have walkie talkies?
They had, it was on Netflix, and they had shotguns. The guys had shotguns.
Oh, cool.
That's what they replaced, right? They were holding shotguns.
Something like
when
that.
They it's when they do the flyover.
Yep.
When they fly over them.
Yep. That's all I remember. Like, E.T.'s great, but I remember that hubbub where they were like, he went back and edited them and added walkie-talkies instead of guns. I was like, eh.
Yeah, I remember that, too. And I remember when that part came, I was like, oh, wait, those are shotguns. So, yeah, I don't know why Netflix, you think Netflix would be the reason why it had been changed, but
nope. Fair game now. Anyway. We're back to PG-13.
So, good old stuff. So
you're making me want to watch E.T. I'll have to, did you say it's on Netflix? I'll catch up on it. That's awesome.
Yeah, it's on Netflix. And Netflix just put a whole bunch of this, all the Back to the Futures are on there now and stuff. They're kind of like, it's like Disney Plus came out and kind of like punched them in the jaw. And now Netflix is like, oh, what's up my sleeve? Yeah. You know what I mean?
We got stuff too. Check it out. We got this and this.
Yeah.
I'm with you. I've been on Netflix with a show called Dark, and that's all about time travel and that sci-fi vein. And oh, I can't get enough. They got good stuff.
Competition.
Lately.
Yes. Competition breeds excellence.
And really cool shows and movies.
So speaking of really cool stuff, let's find out about our crews.
Let's finish out our crews, our caper crews, our heist teams.
So today we're picking our leader, our mastermind.
We are. The brains of the operation. I will butt in here and go first because that's usually how it works. I flipped my two-headed coin. Came up heads, surprising nobody. But my picks are from video games, and this third pick is usually silly. This is the silliest video game. It could kind of work in a heist, but when I thought of leader from a video game, this is the first one that popped into my head. And it is the King of the Cosmos from the Katamari Damacy series. Do any of those words make sense, have any meaning for you?
No, they don't at all. I know what a king is, and I know what the cosmos is.
Okay, well then you're
And I know what a series is.
Yep, okay, you're halfway there. So this is a character. I'll describe the game in a minute, because it's ridiculousness. Silly name, silly characters, silly mechanics. But the main character, or one of the main characters, is the king of the cosmos, and that's what he is. He is the king of the cosmos. What he is doing, his role in the game, he's the leader, but he only leads one person. He leads a character called the prince. And as the prince, he sends you down to Earth, and your whole job and duty is just to roll up stuff. That's it. You're rolling a big ball, and it's sticky, and if you roll over a pencil, it picks up the pencil. If you roll over a chair, once it's big enough, it picks up that chair. And then you get bigger and bigger, and if it rolls up over a person, you pick up that person. And eventually, it's ridiculous. It's a Japanese game called Katamari Damacy, and the whole thing is, it's this marble rolling mechanic. It's the simplest of things, but you go around a You start out in a house, and then you go to a town, and you just roll up stuff.
What platform was this on?
This is a Sony property. It started off on PS2, and then they opened it up eventually. Like, you can find it on the Switch and stuff, and I'm sure I believe the Xbox has two editions of it, but it's been going through it for about six games, then it started on the PlayStation.
Oh, I've never heard of this before.
it's ridiculous. It's absurd. It's sort of like a Japanese cartoon in video game form. But the reason I picked the King of the Cosmos is he's my favorite kind of leader. He is the king of everything, but he's kind of dumb. He's kind of goofy. He's kind of forgetful. Like, the whole point that he's sending this character down to do this absurd rolling of gathering things is so he can take that rolled up ball of just everything and make a new star to put in the sky. Very Japanese, very sort of abstract. But
that's what stars are made out of?
Yep, they're made out of rolled up things. People and animals and cars and bus passes and playing cards. And it's so weird. But absolutely worth your time if you're in that kind of a silly video game mood. I was in a silly mood when I was making these picks. So for the leader of my heist team, while he may not be the best fit, I think it'd be hilarious just for the king of the universe to be like, hey, I need you to go steal this for me because I kind of want to hang it in the sky. Or, you know, make it into a new planet, or just, you know, whatever could happen. It's absurd. It's hijinks could ensue.
Man, and here I thought stars were a miasma of incandescent plasma.
That sounds like crazy talk. You've been reading too much sci-fi. They're made up of rolled-up junk and video game stuff.
Oh, that's fun, man. The depths of your nooks and crannies is why you're a good podcast partner. That's for sure.
Hey, it's a weird one, but if me bringing it up causes you to go check it out, it's worth it because it's silly. You can't be mad while playing that game. It's a great time.
That's fun. All right. I'll have to... what is it again? Say it again.
Katamari. Katamari. Damacy. Damacy.
They didn't even bother translating it. I'm sure that means something.
It does, and if I took better notes, I would have what it probably means.
Ball of stuff.
Yeah, ball of love, loving roll-up, ball happiness time, something like that.
Oh, that's great. All right. Okay, my number three pick, and as hopefully our listeners who know us know, the number three pick is either silly or throwaway, or in some of our things, it's quote-unquote an illegal pick. It's a pick that we can't pick because of rules, but we want to talk about it anyway. So one of the rules we established is that we can't pick from properties that, like, Mikey can't pick a comic book character that was put in a video game. Yep. It has to be a video game generated. So mine has to be a TV generated one. So this character, I think, would be a great mastermind of a heist team. It'd be really interesting, but he's originally from a book. And my number three pick is Tyrion Lannister, Game of Thrones.
Yes.
Peter Dinklage version.
Of course.
Because that's who played him. But I don't know how you don't know what Game of Thrones is or who Tyrion Lannister is or what. But, you know, if you don't, then everything that we might mention is a spoiler because you haven't seen it. If you do, then there you go.
I think we're in spoiler okay zone because it seems like the media world has moved on from Game of Thrones now that it's over.
Yeah,
if you haven't seen it by now, that's kind of on you.
More than moved on from it, it's almost turning into like a... are we going the way of like Avatar with Game of Thrones? Because, I mean, it cooled off hard.
It cooled off hard, but I don't think we've hit nerd revenge stage of we don't acknowledge existence just yet. Like, I think people are still standing for seasons 1 through 7, but they say you can just stop there.
Yeah, and you'll still see like the Stark Wolf on t-shirts and stuff here and there.
Yep.
But I'm saying, though, it's not like how Harry Potter is. It's still a thing, even though it's been over for how long.
Yep.
You know, it's not like other things like the Lord of the Rings, maybe even that was so long ago, but that's still like referenced.
It's still referenced, even though the popularity of it has waned
but
somewhat.
Game of Thrones, I mean, it just ended really in the grand scheme of things. And it was just like, it's almost like when your team loses a championship or something. It's just like, all right,
yep,
we won't talk about that anymore. You know,
we tried to put a positive spin on it, but hey, there are other things
we're not here to talk about the show. We're here to talk about the character of Tyrion Lannister. So
one of the coolest.
He is one of the coolest characters. He's a dwarf, I guess, is what he is in the show, even though they call him the Goblin and stuff. It's strange to me to think that he's not a dwarf in the fantasy dwarf.
Nope.
You know, there's not like a race of them running around. He's just, and of course, in the book, he was supposed to be more deformed, and it was supposed to be more of a more severe defect than just being a little person.
Yeah, in the books he's described like whenever somebody looked upon him, they almost got sick just because of how weird looking he was.
Yeah, that's why they called him the Goblin. But Peter Dinklage is the opposite of that. Peter Dinklage is probably one of the most handsome little people who's ever existed, I think.
Oh, he's super charming.
The face you made, Mike, you're like, huh.
I have a Peter Dinklage crush. I'm not afraid to admit it.
You were trying to think of other little people, and you know, he's the movie star good looks in a tiny package.
Yeah, reigning champ.
So I would say that Tyrion he plays an interesting role in the TV series. In a lot of ways, he is the character who's almost the viewer in a way.
I see that.
Because he sees things both ways. He is not pure evil. He's not pure good. He kind of is literally, and I guess in the books, and I know I shouldn't be referring to the books, but it bleeds over into how the character was treated in the show.
I got you.
In the books, he has two different color eyes.
Mm-hmm.
And that's supposed to, a lot of people think that's he sees things two ways. It's a very pointed
Oh, that's that's poetic. You know? I got you.
Yeah, as a novel should be. But I don't think they did that. I don't think they gave Peter Dinklage a contact, or I don't recall him having two different colored eyes. Do you?
No. All I remember is the weird Lannister blonde hair. But other than that, I think it was just Peter Dinklage straight up.
The first season, you mean?
Yeah. They got the once we ran out of bleach in the later seasons. So.
It's like the Brady Bunch. The hair changed all of a sudden.
Yeah. But that is an interesting point, because just to add one more bit onto that, he is the outcast character. So he does have the perspective of being on the outside of most of the situations, because he wasn't ever really included until you get later into the series. So him being the stand-in for the reader is great. I just now realized that. That's awesome.
Yeah. And I think he'd be a great mastermind in a heist situation, just because he's always one step ahead. He's always planning. He's always scheming.
Yep.
He's definitely not afraid to get his hands dirty. I mean, he murdered his father and his girlfriend. Game of Thrones. He planned the defense of the city that
King's
one
Landing,
time.
Yeah.
The defense of King's Landing, and it went off perfectly.
It did.
And everything that went wrong for him was basically done to him. He was falsely accused, like, 3 to 4 times. I don't know how many times he was falsely accused of something.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But, you know, I think I can't take him, but I think it'd be interesting to see him in a heist situation planning something like that. It'd be kind of weird that he'd be in the modern era, but he drinks and he knows things.
And all he does is sitting around and read, because all of his family is going off to battle and they don't want him there. So he's like, all right, I'll just get smarter and realize how you should have done this, you know?
Yeah. So it would be interesting, that type of character. But third pick, I can't take him anyway, but it would be an interesting, if you take a character like just basically with that structure, put it in the modern era.
Yep.
Have Peter Dinklage play it and have him the head of like a heist. It'd be interesting.
I think he'd still grasp it just because he's used to being in unusual situations. So when you're saying like, hey, we got to go take over this militia group. He's like, you mean another kingdom? He's like, no, militia group. He's like, what? They have helicopters. He's like, what are those? It's like kind of like dragons. He's like, okay, I get it. Let's go.
Yeah.
I don't think the modern world would faze him. That's a great pick.
Yeah. Thanks.
So now we go, we're getting a little bit lighter because this is video games, but we go from Game of Thrones, we go from medieval times to back to sci-fi space, because that's what Mikey's in the mood for, I guess. But my brain for the second pick chose Fox McCloud from the Star Fox series.
Oh, yes.
Also showing my hand that I am a Nintendo fanboy, because a whole bunch of my picks have been from Nintendo properties, but you can't help your childhood. That's what I grew up playing. So.
No. But Star Fox is legendary.
Exactly. The character's often referred to as Star Fox just because they think that's him. But it's Fox McCloud. He is a fox-human hybrid that has metal legs, really cool, like pilot gear. He's essentially Malcolm Reynolds in fox form as opposed to human form. But here's his advantages as a leader. It's real plain and simple. One, his whole crew is made up of different creatures, different aliens. So... Mm-hmm. Him being in my ragtag group of random video game characters is easy for him. Doesn't faze him at all. But, I mean, he had Slippy Toad, Falco Lombardi, who's a bird, and Peppy Hare, who's a rabbit. So, I mean, that's his crew that he rolls with all the time. So, I don't think having Donkey Kong or a flying turtle in a cloud is really going to, you know, be a detriment to him. But... he's been to multiple planets. He's good at hand-to-hand combat if you've played Smash Brothers. He's real cocky. He's got that leader attitude. He's like, we're going to get this done and nothing's going to stop us. Here we go. All right. Go team. And that's it. I love Fox McCloud. So he's my second pick for leader.
Did Star Fox have voice acting in it, or was it one of the ones that was like mumble and then they just had to read the words?
It's the latter. They started off when it started off like the original Super Nintendo one. It was just like little digital like sounds, you know?
Yeah.
Like okay, it would say duo barrel roll, but they didn't actually say duo barrel roll until you got to like Nintendo 64 and GameCube
and
further down.
Okay. That's what I remember, and I remember being like, is this Japanese? Was it Japanese?
Yep.
Or was it? Oh, it was Japanese. Mm-hmm. So there was voice acting, but it was in Japanese.
The creation of the game was more on the Japanese Nintendo side of development.
Right.
The actual, like, noises were just sound effects and stand-in for sort of, like, Charlie Brown's mom speak.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I don't think it was actual Japanese.
Oh. So it literally was gibberish.
Yeah, it was just like R2.
Yeah, yeah, and they were like, these are aliens, so they're speaking. I remember in school debates about, like, I just remember, I can see the shaggy-haired kid at the lunch table going like, that's Japanese. I know it's Japanese because my cousin is over in Japan right now in the Navy. You know,
well, to be fair, I am relying on memories of me being a 13-year-old. So if it is Japanese and I didn't realize it, that's absolutely a possibility. And I apologize now.
I think you might be right, though. I think it might be gibberish. I remember it as being gibberish.
I got you.
But of course, like you said, we might have been ignorant kids and being like, foreign language equal gibberish.
Yeah, I get to fly a spaceship. All right, let's go. I will do a barrel roll.
Man, that game was fun.
And had a he has an arch nemesis. He had a recurring boss. He's will stand up in the eyes of a defeat and nothing gets him down. He keeps going. I mean, there's like 8 Star Fox games, so can't keep him down.
Star Fox. That brings back memories. That game, I remember that game being kind of hard.
Yep.
Too.
It's one of those games where you play like the first 4 levels and you're like, all right, I get it. I can't pass the 5th level, so I guess this is as far as I'm playing.
Oh, man, so many games were like that. I don't know how many games I didn't finish just because it was like you couldn't. It was like impossible.
Yeah.
That's fun. All right. Now, my number 2 pick is a silly pick,
yes.
But he's an original character.
Okay.
And he's a wonderful mastermind, but it's silly. And I just want to talk about it because we've been talking about like Rockford Files and all these old TV stuff that was on before we were really watching TV that we'd see in reruns.
Yes.
And there was something that I loved, and I am going to find here, there's a quote from, you know, Frank Conniff, TV's Frank?
I do.
In part of his stand-up routine, he has this quote, I loved watching Hogan's Heroes as a kid. It taught me that war is hell, unless you're locked up in a World War II POW camp with the Germans. Then it's a series of wacky misadventures.
That is a great bit.
So I'm picking Colonel Robert Hogan,
yes.
Colonel Hogan from Hogan's Heroes.
The titular character.
He was a wonderful mastermind. I mean, come on. The plans were so complex and so crazy.
Yep.
And sometimes they wouldn't go right for him, but he'd think his way out of it. He's a literal mastermind. I mean, this guy is in a Luftwaffe prisoner of war camp in World War II. Let's break this down. Hogan's Heroes. Yeah, maybe like my kids are like, Hogan's Heroes? What the heck is Hogan's Heroes? Well, let's talk about the show a little bit, and then we'll talk about Colonel Hogan a little bit, because this is...
Let's do it.
There's a lot of interesting stuff going on. Are you familiar with Hogan's Heroes? Did you watch it?
I didn't watch it by any regular means, but I do know of it and can, like, picture it. I know that, like, either it's been in meme form or GIF form, and I've seen it a little bit, but I don't think I've sat and watched an entire episode in a minute. So,
oh, cool. Well, let me. I watch lots of Hogan's Heroes because I don't know. I just did.
Yep.
It's funny to me. So it's a common joke. People talk about this joke all the time, but it makes sense to me. I guess it bends some people's brains of what they're seeing in reruns, but it makes sense to me. And I don't know if it's because I'm a generation closer to the World War II generation, but
yeah.
The deal is that it's set in a prisoner of war camp, a Luftwaffe prisoner of war camp. That's the Nazi Germans Air Force. And they made special prisoner of war camps for guys who were shot Air Force pilots and Air Force crewmen. They didn't just put them in any camp. It's like, these guys were in the Air Force and the enemy's Air Force, so our Air Force is going to watch them in the prisoner of war camp.
Gotcha.
Okay.
Yep.
It's a very German thing to do.
Yeah, special prisoners.
And so you'd think like, oh, wow, this is like a serious thing, like The Great Escape or, you know, one of those movies or something like that. But no, it's a sitcom. It's a hilarious 60s sitcom. And the whole reason was it was done this way is the whole point of this thing is they're taking the expletive, everybody, they're taking the piss out of the Germans, the Nazis in the show. And the funny thing is almost all of the German characters are played by Jewish actors.
Oh, that's hilarious.
And a lot of it is kind of on purpose that they did that, because they are making fun of them. They're making fun of their oppressors.
And they are the most bumbling of the characters in the series.
They're so bumbling. Okay. They're so incompetent, right? And that's part of it. And what's funny is this goofy 60s Gilligan's Island level show has this really like deep undertone if you dig into it.
Yeah, they're handling it correctly.
Yeah, they're literally just – they're making fun of their oppressor. And there's also a side note on this show. The show has – it's one of the first American sitcoms to feature a black character as an integral member of the cast.
Oh, fun.
So Kinchlow is a black character. He's Hogan's second in command at the camp. He's a genius, and he's so integral to the show that – did you know they did this? Southern stations would edit out black characters.
Oh, no way.
Right? But they made him so important in the show that they couldn't do a cut. They couldn't do a black free cut.
Yeah, you'd have to cut out like an act of the three acts or something.
Yeah, it was impossible because he was so integral as a second in command.
That's awesome.
They did that on purpose.
Oh, that's even more awesome.
So what I'm saying is this show is like they're making fun of their oppressors. They're making fun of the fascists. They're making fun of the Nazis. And they're promoting African-American in the 60s. Come on.
All while making a sitcom that really has no, you know, it didn't have to be serious at all in the first place.
It's so fluffy. It's like Gilligan's Island level stuff.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Know? Yeah. So anyway, just that's the background of this thing. So
very cool.
So basically what it is that Colonel Hogan is the senior prisoner of war in the camp, and Colonel Klink is the German
who's
running
name.
The camp.
Yep.
And basically Colonel Hogan's running underground operations outside of the camp. So there's tunnels all over the camp, and instead of escaping, they go around the German countryside doing sabotage missions, doing heist-like missions, infiltrating high-level German command meetings to get information, all this stuff.
That's cool.
And Colonel Hogan's the mastermind of it all. And they have a bug in Colonel Klink's office so they can listen to stuff. And the funny thing, the wonderful thing, the bug is there's a photograph of Hitler like addressing a crowd.
Uh-huh.
And the bug is placed in the microphone of the picture of the microphone.
Oh, that's hilarious.
The microphone. And they listen to it on their tea kettle. You know, the tea kettle is like it comes apart and the speaker's in there. So they have all this like equipment like that, all this like.
But it sounds like they MacGyvered it. So that fits in with their team. That fits in with their team perfectly.
They did. And Colonel Hogan's like, he's like the puppet master. He's a charmer. Like every time there's a woman around. Yeah. Well, here you go.
That's why he's the leader.
Yeah. He charms men too. He's the classic, the men want to be him and the women want to be with him.
Oh, perfect.
Type thing, you know? It's just the show's funny. I mean, Bob Crane, who plays Colonel Hogan, is a charming guy anyway. And it comes across, it's light, it's fluffy. They're making fun of Germans. You got Sergeant Schultz sitting there who kind of knows what's going on, but he's afraid to say anything because he'll know it might get him in trouble because he's in charge of watching them. So he does that classic, I know nothing. I see nothing.
I'm not in trouble. Yeah.
It's just the show is like a lot of people pass over it because they don't realize what they were trying to do back then. They think it's like a, because there's another show of the same era that's slightly similar. That show F Troop. I don't know if you've heard of it. Where that show takes a lot of hits because they are making fun of Native Americans in it. And all the Native Americans are actually played by like Italian guys and stuff like that. So. And rightly so, people kind of look sideways at that show.
Mm-hmm.
But this show, it's different. They knew what they were doing while they were doing it, even though it was goofy. And so it was packaged in a 60s sitcom style.
I got you.
But there was more going on.
Have you gone back to watch episodes recently? Like, does it still hold up?
Oh, yeah. I see it all the time. I mean, it's nostalgia. It's nostalgia for me. You have huge nostalgia goggles on.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I don't think you'd have to go take a look and then report back to me about what you think about it. Because I used to, it was one of those things that was also my dad thought it was hilarious. And I could sit there and watch it with my dad. And it was one of the things I could watch with him. And we'd laugh together and, you know, all that kind of stuff. So
that's great.
Because my dad's a history buff and passed that on to me and really into World War II stuff because he was born during World War II. And we'd go to air shows and history museums and all that kind of stuff. So part of it was like the history portion. It's like the History Channel sitcom.
especially if they were mindful enough to sort of at least do a smart spin on satiring of that history. Yeah, props to them. That's great.
Yeah. So Colonel Hogan. And I'll tell you this one story. Here's a little one side note story.
Give it to me. Rattle
and prattle on more, but this is our podcast.
We can do what we want.
And I think Mikey knows this. So, and I'm going to shout out if you're listening. Marco Tillman, if you're listening, name drop. He was a friend of mine in college, and he was from Germany.
Oh, nice.
And Werner Kempler, who played Colonel Klink, who was a German Jew, I don't know where he was from in Germany, but it must have been the same area that Marco was from because their accents were exactly the same. And our dorm that we lived in was called Hogan House.
Oh.
So what would happen is he would say, I'm going to go back to Hogan. And he'd sound exactly like Colonel Klink. And everyone would laugh. And he'd be like, why is everyone laughing? You know? And then it'd be like, and we try to get him to yell it too, because, you know,
yeah,
Colonel Klink would be like, Hogan, you know? Oh my gosh. It was hilarious. And then we would also, earmuffs kids, but it was college. We'd also get him loaded up on beers and stuff. And we'd have him do lines from.
Say this Klink line. Say it.
Yes.
Now
no one has ever escaped from Stalag 13. Oh my gosh.
That's better than my brain went. I was anticipating that the end of the story is you go back to your dorm room and you pull out the tea kettle and you start listening into the bug that you had in your German friend's dorm room. So
it didn't work out
that way.
No. Marco, I love you. I love you.
Shout out, Marco. Yeah. That's awesome. And an excellent second pick. But if those are our second picks, that can only mean one thing, and that one thing is our first pick.
First picks!
For leader of our heist cruise. This one's for you, Kev. I came across it online and doing my research, and I said, I really can't think of an idea better than this. This is Mikey taking this seriously. This is a thought experiment that I want to go somewhat successfully, maybe once. Oh. And I'm picking Commander Shepard from the Mass Effect series.
Oh, wow.
We've talked
what a great leader, yeah.
Yeah, we've talked about Mass Effect numerous times on this podcast for good reason, because of all nerd properties, it's one of the highlights, especially when it comes to video games. But the thing in my mind that makes Commander Shepard a great leader, and it's sort of the principle of the Mass Effect games, is it all comes down to choices. And that's one of the sort of, I don't know, Mass Effect wasn't really like the groundbreaker in it, but they definitely developed the concept of the choices you make in game affect how the game turns out.
Yes. I think the groundbreaker in that was Fable.
Oh, that's probably true.
Yeah.
Because they had that whole good and evil side of it. Love those games as well. But Mass Effect does that expertly. And that's one of the key features of the game. And the whole perspective on those choices is through you, who is playing Commander Shepard. Either Femme Shep or Male Shep. You had the choice. So either way, if you want Femme Shep on your heist team or Male Shep, you can have both. So it's up to you to pick. I think I pick Femme Shep just because same reason you pick female characters in video games. If you're going to be hanging out with them all day, ladies tend to smell a little bit nicer and be a little bit more accommodating. So, but Commander Shepard, he, like I was saying with Fox McCloud from Star Fox, he works with aliens. He works with Seth Green's character, the Joker. Like, he works with wise asses and sort of lazy people or get-her-done people, and he knows how to make his team accomplish the goal that's set before him, regardless of the choice. So, Commander Shepard, he's going to lead my weird, weird ragtag group of video game people.
That's great pick, man. Mass Effect is top five for me.
Oh, I believe it.
As far as video games go all time, I never had a bad time playing Mass Effect. Even the latest one, Andromeda, that a lot of people had problems with, I didn't have any real issues with it. A lot of the issues they had was graphic issues. But as you know, and as I've said before, I often wait for video games to work out the kinks before I jump into them.
Yeah, I gotcha.
And I'll tell you, it takes a little willpower sometimes, but you usually end up with a better experience. And if you can really wait, you can wait to get a Game of the Year edition, and it'll have all the DLC and for cheaper.
Oh, way cheaper, yeah.
Yeah, so if you can hold off, not be the latest and greatest, so that kind of puts me out of the running to be a video game reviewer, because I don't know how they do that, those guys, how they...
Oh, keeping up with everything coming out, like, on the regular?
Or they, like, will put out a review. I know sometimes they'll get the game early, but still, at the same time, you put out a review for a game that takes however many hours to play.
Oh, yeah.
Like, the week it comes out.
Exactly.
What? I mean, that's like what Adderall and coffee crushed together, and right? I mean, how do you do that?
Oh, it's a different brain setup. It's different hand-eye coordination. They see the world at a slightly faster frame rate than the rest of us.
I don't know, man. I don't know how to. Wow. Every time, but that's crazy. Yeah, Mass Effect's good. Have you played them all?
I played the first two, and then I tapped out and just went on to other things as one is wont to do. But the first two I enjoyed immensely. So
yeah. They're great. I like the lore of them and everything.
Exactly.
It's really cool. I was actually telling my kids about it, because they're talking about just sci-fi tropes and sci-fi stuff. And I was telling them about how that's one of the whole thing in that, right, is that the humans weren't sure about alien life, and they found that Mass Effect relay out in the Kuiper Belt,
yep,
basically.
Mm-hmm.
And that allowed them to do faster than light travel and all that kind of stuff. So that's one of the fun ones. I like the... there used to be an alien race that doesn't exist anymore type thing.
Oh, that's the best. They did that in Halo 2. That's the Flood.
Yeah.
Oh, so crazy.
Yeah.
And I think also Shepard does the middle ground well. Like, we've talked about characters that don't have names, like Doomguy in video games, so you can just be you in a video game, you know? But then they also have Commander Shepard, who's based on Alan Shepard, who's an actual, like, Navy, like, pilot, astronaut, one of the first people to go to the moon. And they do a nice balance where you are playing this specific person who has these morals and ethics, but you still get to wiggle around in there, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Real cool.
Yeah, that is fun. Great pick.
All for you. Happy podcast day.
Well, my first pick falls along those lines. My first pick, I probably wouldn't have picked this if I hadn't been doing a rewatch of this series and realizing that this is a heist show over and over and over again, and realizing during this watch at what a bloody good leader and mastermind this guy is. So, and you mentioned him earlier. I pick Captain Malcolm Reynolds.
Yes.
From Firefly/Serenity.
You can't take this guy from me.
He's a big damn hero, aims to misbehave. So I'm doing a rewatch of Firefly with my kids. They haven't seen it before, and they love it, of course, because how can you not?
How if you don't you
just leave, they would have got disowned out of the will. No. And what's wonderful too is one of my sons is like, as we're getting really close to the end, and he's like wanting to watch it slower and slower because he knows it's going to be over, and he's starting to get angry at Fox, like posthumously, basically.
Oh, I love the slowdown though. That's such a nerd thing. It's like, I don't want it to run out.
Yeah, but in Firefly, the show is ultimately a heist show. It only has like 15 episodes.
Yep.
And in those 15 episodes, they do a train job. They do a heist on a train, right? They do a heist where they knock over a hospital.
Yeah, they sneak into that medical facility.
Yeah, and steal drugs from the hospital. And they do a heist where they steal the Lassiter laser pistol, one of the first laser pistols, like a secure area that has like lasers and everything. There's 15 episodes, there's three heists in the stupid thing, right? And some other like side jobs too and stuff, but there's three big heists that happen in that show.
That's great.
And who's in charge of it? Captain Reynolds. Now, we've discussed Firefly a million times. I think I brought up Jane and the muscle part, right? Yeah, so.
We brought up Jane. We've talked about Kaylee. I think I've talked about Wash or somebody, but yeah.
And I had Saffron in there. Yeah, I mean, come on. So if we have to break down Firefly for you again, basically, the Joss Whedon sci-fi show that didn't last long because Fox was canceling everything then because they had some executive who needs to go and just repent.
Yeah.
But Captain Reynolds is the captain of the Firefly class ship called Serenity, And he was a former sergeant in the resistance movement, the brown coat movement, fighting for the independence of the outer rim planets. And they lost. So now the Alliance controls everything, and he's got a grudge against the Alliance. A lot of this base is based off of Jesse James in the real world in a lot of the way. It's a space Western, literally.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And the thing about Mal is that he seems country because he grew up on a farm. He seems and he comes across that way, but he leans into it a little bit because of who he is and where he's from. He's got that independent pride, but he is a freaking genius mastermind when it comes to planning this stuff.
Oh, for sure.
And the thing it comes across most in is the one where he's going after the Lassiter laser, because he has contingency plan after contingency plan. He always has a backup plan within his plan.
Yep.
And you don't know about it until the show plays out, because you always think stuff's going wrong for him. You're like, oh, this is going bad. You don't know what's going on. And then sure enough, he planned for that eventuality.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's a very Robin Hood character, but I mean, he's basically a bad guy because he is against the oppressive government.
Yep.
You know, much like a Robin Hood. So yes, he's an outlaw. Yes, he's a criminal, but he's got good morals and he loves his crew. Like, you do something wrong to one of his crew, you've done it to him.
Yep.
And he ain't afraid to make you think he's going to kill you if you betray him, you know? And then at the same time, he's not afraid to, if he thinks he's in the right, he'll go into execute mode.
Yeah, true, true.
He kicked a guy into the engine of his ship once. And yeah, I mean, there's all kinds of stuff he's done that were, you know, a little bit unhinged, but he thought it was morally right. So,
and that is one of the things, like, they do show him being a little bit goofy when it's him and his crew inside the ship. Like, they're definitely right. comedic bits, but whenever they're in mission mode, he goes into like leader mode. This is how it's going down. Decision made. If things go wrong, we do this. If things go right, we do this. Let's get it done.
And he knows his people so well. There's a scene in there where a whole episode, really. I believe the episode is called War Stories, where Wash, who's the pilot, who's married to the second in command, Zoe, he's kind of jealous of the relationship that they have because they were war buddies together. And his wife has this kind of war buddy relationship with the captain of the ship.
Bonded through battle. Yeah, it's hard to
do. And he's kind of jealous of it in some ways. So he kind of forces his way to go on a mission instead of her to kind of prove his manliness. And they end up getting captured and tortured.
Yep.
And Mal trying to keep Wash alive and keep him fighting against the torture realizes the best way to do that is to make him angry. So he acts like he does indeed want to have relations with his wife and leans into it and just keeps him angry the whole time.
Yep.
And of course, once they get back together, they play it for jokes because it's one of those things where their relationship really is truly platonic, and it's so platonic to the point that they're uncomfortable even pretending.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
And platonic to the point that Jane, who's kind of a horn dog, thinks it's gross to even think about it that way. You know what I mean?
That's like my brother and my sister making out. That's weird.
Yeah. Yeah. It's that kind of stuff. He knows the psychology of his crew. So he's going to look at Patrick Kubi. He's going to look at B.A. Baracus. He's going to look at Jim Rockford. He's going to look at Maurice Moss. And he's going to treat them all differently but equally, and know how to motivate the four of them.
Yep.
And know how to lead them, and he'll have great loyalty to him. And come on, Nathan Fillion with Bill Burr and Mr. T and James Garner and Richard Ayoade. Man, that's a cast and a half.
I want to watch the show right now. At least eight episodes. Give me 13 if we got enough budget.
Yeah, man. In my mind, it's not set in the... See, he's from the future, so in my mind, it's set in the modern kind of Ocean's 11 type of slick era.
Yeah, but
and I want to bring all these people into that. So really, the only person who's in the right spot is, well...
Bill Burr.
Bill Burr and Richard Ayoade as Maurice Moss, but the other ones are kind of out of time, but I think it'd be fun.
But Captain Mal would be great because for as much as he's from the future, you know, air quotes, he's a space cowboy, so it's like old-timey, so... It'd be curious to see how I'm sure he'd fit in perfectly.
Did you know that this is a fun fact? Here's a fun fact about Captain Mal I found out as much as we talk about it. Did you know that in, and I don't know where this came from. I found it online. I might be talking out of my, but anyway, the life expectancy in this modern era is supposed to be way longer. People are supposed to live to be like 120 or something like that. So Mal's supposed to be 50, even though he's being played by 31-year-old Nathan Fillion.
Just because of the futuristic timeline of longer life expectancy?
I guess so.
That's I believe it, but that's crazy.
Yeah, weird, right?
He's like ancient Indiana Jones, but still looks like young Indiana Jones. That's great. He's like modern Harrison Ford with the looks of Star Wars Harrison Ford.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's the thing. So go rewatch Firefly and look at it as like a heist thing, and you realize how heisty it is, how the jobs they pull off. It's very – it'd be fun to see that whole crew do these kind of heists, but like in a slick Ocean's 11 type era. It'd be fun to me.
Oh, I want to watch it so bad. And if you got teenagers, get them on board. Spread the Firefly love. Keep the lore alive.
Yeah. You can't take the sky from me.
This doesn't have to be the name of your show, but I did write this in my notes that your team should at least reference themselves once as the K-Team.
The K-Team?
Instead of the A-Team, it's the K-Team, because you're Kevin.
Oh, okay. See, I was like, what? Duh.
That was just
K mean? What's K mean? Oh, man.
But my caper crew of a Flying Turtle and Donkey Kong and BD Joe from Crazy Taxi and Cortana from Halo, led by Commander Shepard, has just arrived on the heist mission that I sent them on. This is one for me. They brought me a pizza. So,
oh, a pizza is here. Man, we've been forgetting to say the pizza's here.
Our heist teams have been on it. It took them a little bit.
Well, nah, it's also because in the current dark times we're in, you're not supposed to be sharing food anymore. So we'd have to order individual calzones. But
yeah, that's why they get heisted too. Can't touch anybody. It's a covert mission.
The heist of the pizza. But Mikey's at his place. I'm at my place. So we have separate pizzas.
Separate pizzas.
Our pizzas are here. And that means it's the end of the podcast.
Dun, dun, dun.
We want to thank everyone so much for continuing to listen through these times. We hope everyone's being super safe out there, keeping their hands washed and their masks on.
And being nerdy, catching up on shows like we're talking about, even if it's a deep dive, catching back up in video games and just losing yourself and rolling up weird stuff in a Japanese video game, just stuff like that. Hope you're having fun.
Yeah, man. And FaceTime with your friends. Get on Zoom. Mikey and our friends, when we're all on the hard lockdown, we're still getting together. We're actually managed to play Yahtzee like remotely with each other and stuff. So you can still play your games. You can still do things because we have this wonderful technology now. So hang in there, everybody. We'll get through this one way or the other.
Yes, we will.
So we want to thank you for listening. We also want to thank that guy, Brad, for doing our announcing, Not Scott Productions for our equipment, Jazzar for doing our music. And we all hope you guys have fun running around trying to steal things from the majorly laser protected places.
From the scary evil organization that lives at the edge of town, yeah.
Yes, the scary evil organization that lives at the edge of town. We're coming for you.
Oh, no.
We're going to get that Fuji what's it widget out of there, and we're going to save the world.
Now whatchamacallit? Go Caper Crew.
You go, Caper Crew. Bye, everybody.